about it. VOA 1, the hits.
Hello, and welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Mario Ritter in Washington. Every day on this program, we bring you news from and about the United States and the world. This is what you will hear on today's program. You will hear a report on South Korea from Faith Perlow. Then, Brian Lynn tells about a device for lunar exploration on the Science Report. Next is our Making of a Nation series. But first, this report.
Native groups in Brazil's Amazon rainforest area are increasingly using the internet to share evidence of environmental crimes. These groups are using phones, video cameras, and social media to share information with the public. They want to increase pressure on officials to answer their concerns quickly. Until recently, indigenous communities often used radio to send their calls for help. These calls were shared with the media and the public by environmental and indigenous rights groups. Brazil's President Jair Bolsonaro has criticized these nonprofit groups. Bolsonaro supports legalizing mining and land leasing in protected indigenous areas. But video and photos coming directly from indigenous people have been getting attention. This is forcing officials and the public to deal with what is happening. Nara Barre is head of the group Coordination of Indigenous Organizations of the Brazilian Amazon. She said, "When used properly, technology helps a lot in real-time monitoring and denouncing." Communications connectivity is not only helping with reporting information on social media. Brazil's Federal Prosecutor's Office has set up a website to register reported crimes and receive uploaded visual material. In the past, people in distant communities had to make a long and costly trip to the nearest city that had a federal prosecutor's office. Xipai territory is part of a rainforest area known as Terra do Meio. It has many indigenous and traditional river communities. Internet connections were not common until 2020. That is when several nonprofit groups, including Health in Harmony and the Socio-Environmental Institute, financed the building of 17 antennae throughout the large area. Marcelo Salazar is Health in Harmony's Brazil program coordinator. He said, "The internet makes it easier for health, education, and forest economy issues. Fighting environmental crime is an added benefit," he said. 4 out of 5 Xipai communities are now connected to communication services. About 1,300 kilometers to the west, in the Amazonian state of Rondônia, internet service let the Uruweuwauwau people take classes in photography and video so they could record deforestation. A 3-day training class in 2020 was held on Zoom. The effort produced the documentary film, The Territory. The movie won awards at this year's Sundance Film Festival, Copenhagen International Documentary Film Festival, and others. Throughout its production, American director Alex Pritz used WhatsApp to communicate with his newly trained camera operators. Bolsonaro's promises to legalize mining and other activities on indigenous lands in the Amazon have led more people to go to those areas. Indigenous and environmental groups estimate there are 20,000 illegal miners in Yanomami territory. It is an area about the size of Portugal in northern Brazil. Bolsonaro's government says there are 3,500 miners there. I'm John Russell.
South Korea's recent decision to ease many of its COVID-19 restrictions has some office workers feeling more concerned than happy. That is because the end of social distancing means a possible return of hushik. Hushik are after-work meal gatherings that are considered part of South Korean work culture. Employees do not get paid during hushik. The events often end very late at night. Tiang is a 29-year-old office worker. She works and lives in Seoul. She only wanted to be known by her last name so that she could speak freely about her employer. Tiang said she thinks that hushik is out of date. She said such gatherings take up too much of an employee's free time. Hushik is part of your work life, except it's unpaid. The worst part about the after-work dinners is that you don't know when it'll end, Tiang said. With drinks, it could really continue well into the night until who knows when. During the pandemic, Tiang was able to spend her nights the way she wanted to. She cleaned the house, made herself dinner, and exercised. Even before the pandemic, many young South Koreans did not support hushik very much. They also did not necessarily like other work-related events, such as company trips and hikes. The pandemic prevented companies from holding hushik events, and it may have permanently changed hushik culture. Almost 80% of people questioned for a recent survey by Incruit Corp. said their company's hushik culture has changed. 90% of those respondents said they were pleased with the changes. Seo Yong-gu is a marketing professor at a Seoul Women's University. Seo said, now that employees know what it's like to have off hours kept for themselves, companies won't be able to fully restore the old after-dinner and weekend gathering culture. Kim Eun-bong is 30 years old. He started a city government job during the pandemic. He said that he feels lucky that he did not have to take part in the required hushik culture because of the social distancing rules. I actually liked meal gatherings held during lunch hours because I knew they would end at 1 p.m., he said. I am cautiously hoping the company dinner culture will change now that it has been almost gone for 2 years. I'm Faith Perlow.
The American Space Agency, NASA, has developed a wearable device to guide future explorers on the moon. The system is designed to map terrain and guide astronauts through unknown territory and dark areas of the moon. The device can be worn as a backpack. It is called the Kinematic Navigation and Cartography Knapsack, or KNAC. The system was specially designed to provide navigation assistance on the moon, which lacks the kinds of GPS systems that exist on Earth. KNAC is equipped with a technology called LIDAR to produce real-time 3D maps. LIDAR uses sensors and light lasers to map the surrounding environment and measure distances. NASA engineers worked together with private partners to develop the system. One of the partners is Ava Inc. of Mountain View, California. The company supplied LIDAR sensors and support for the project, NASA said. The sensors it provided to NASA use a technology known as FMCW, Ava said in a press release. NASA says the technology can provide millions of measurement points per second and create a high-quality map of an area's terrain. The company explained that the sun does not interfere with FMCW technology and it can operate in darkness. This can help astronauts and moon vehicles explore and map the lunar surface during the day or at night. James Reuther is the Vice President of Technology at Ava. He said the KNAC system will be important to help astronauts carry out critical objectives of NASA's Artemis program. Artemis is NASA's program to return humans to the moon. It aims to land American astronauts on the moon by 2025. It would mark the first time humans have visited the moon since NASA's Apollo 17 landing in 1972. Michael Zanetti leads the KNAC project at NASA's Marshall Space Flight Center in Huntsville, Alabama. He said the device is like a super-powered version of laser-based technologies used in surveying operations and driver assistance tools for vehicles. Zanetti noted that KNAC can be used by astronauts for both navigation operations and science mapping. It also will help ensure the safety of astronauts and rover vehicles in a GPS-denied environment such as the moon, he said. Zanetti added that the system can provide real-time maps to show explorers how far they've come and how far is left to go to reach their destination. NASA also worked with Alabama-based Torch Technologies, Inc. to develop a working model KNAC backpack. The device has been tested in several settings, including at a NASA research center in Kilbourne Hole, New Mexico. The center is used for lunar research because it is near a volcanic crater that contains terrain similar to the moon. The space agency says the device can become an important part of future exploration activities on the moon. This could especially be true for astronaut visits to the moon's south pole. NASA wants to send explorers to this area. However, it receives little sunlight and would be difficult for astronauts to navigate. The development team says it will next work to shrink the size of Knack. The current backpack model weighs about 18 kilograms. The goal is to produce a device that is about the size of a soda container for easy transportability. I'm Brian Lynn.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember.
The presidential race looks jar-lid tight. We could be in for a long night as voters decide whether Vice President Al Gore or Texas Governor George Bush will be the next president of the United States. It is that close.
In 2000, Americans were preparing to elect a new president in November. The United States Constitution limits presidents to two terms. Bill Clinton would be leaving office, so his Democratic Party needed to choose a new candidate. The Democrats nominated Clinton's vice president, Al Gore. Gore chose Senator Joseph Lieberman of Connecticut as his running mate. Lieberman became the first Jewish candidate ever nominated by a major party to such a high office. He was first elected to the Senate in 1988. Al Gore was born in Washington in 1948. He was named after his father, a United States Senator from Tennessee. The future vice president grew up in Washington and in Carthage, Tennessee, where his family had a farm. He studied government at Harvard in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and graduated in 1969. That was during the Vietnam War. His father opposed American involvement in that war. But the young Al Gore joined the army and spent about 6 months of his service as a military journalist in Vietnam. Back in civilian life, Gore again worked as a reporter. Later, he studied religion and then law at Vanderbilt University in Nashville, Tennessee. But he dropped out of law school to enter politics. He was elected to the United States House of Representatives in 1976. He became known for supporting nuclear arms control and protecting the environment. Al Gore was elected to the Senate in 1984. He was re-elected 6 years later. That was after he had tried to become the Democratic candidate for president in 1988. Then, in 1992, Bill Clinton won the party's nomination and asked Al Gore to be his vice president. As vice president, Gore became known for his work on issues involving the environment, technology, and foreign relations. In March 1999, he gave an interview on CNN. During that interview, he talked about his plans to enter the race for the presidential nomination the following year. He made the statement that during his service in Congress,
I took the initiative in creating the Internet.
He went on to say that he took the initiative in moving forward other efforts important to the economy, environmental protection, and educational improvements. But his comment about the Internet led to jokes and criticism that he was claiming to have actually invented it. The Republicans nominated Texas Governor George W. Bush as their presidential candidate. For his running mate, he chose Dick Cheney,
a former Secretary of Defense.
George Walker Bush was born in Texas in 1946, the oldest child of former President George Herbert Walker Bush. He grew up in the Texas cities of Midland and Houston. He graduated from Yale University in New Haven, Connecticut, and earned a master's in business administration at Harvard University. During the Vietnam War years, he was a pilot in the Texas Air National Guard. Later, he worked in the state's oil and gas industry. In 1988, Bush worked on his father's winning campaign for president. Later, he became one of the owners of the Texas Rangers, a Major League Baseball team. In 1994, George W. Bush was elected governor of Texas. He was re-elected 4 years later. Several other candidates also ran for president in the November 2000 election. These minor, or so-called third-party candidates, included activist Ralph Nader. He represented the Green Party. He criticized large corporations for having too much influence in America. Pat Buchanan, a conservative, ran as the Reform Party candidate. Public opinion surveys showed that the race between George Bush and Al Gore would be extremely close. The election took place on November 7th. More than 100 million people voted for them. Al Gore received about 540,000 more of those votes than George Bush did. But winning the popular vote does not make someone president. Americans do not directly elect their president. When they vote for a candidate, what they are really doing is voting for electors. The number of electors for each state is based on the size of its congressional delegation, which is based on population. These electors then vote in December in a system known as the Electoral College. The Electoral College officially elects the president. In the 2000 election, there were 538 electors in the Electoral College. To become president, the winner needed a simple majority of 270. Al Gore won the popular vote, but neither he nor George Bush won a majority of the electoral votes. Not that any of this was clear on election night.
Bulletin, Florida pulled back into the undecided column. This thing is so wild, wacky, and woolly, nobody knows how it's going
to
come out.
CNN right now is moving Florida to the too close to call column.
Too close to call.
Florida is now too close to call. I want to say that again. It's a confusing situation. Now, if you're disgusted with us, frankly, I don't blame you.
Florida is a big southern state. It had enough electoral votes to make either candidate the winner. Election officials counted almost 6 million votes on election night. George Bush had slightly more votes than Al Gore, but not enough to avoid a recount. Florida state law calls for a recount when the difference between two candidates is less than 0.5% of the votes. State recounts normally involve the governor, but the governor of Florida said he would not get involved. That was because the governor was Jeb Bush, George Bush's brother. And there were other issues with the election. Some black voters said election workers had unjustly prevented them from voting. There were also problems with voting machines and ballots. In one area, some Gore supporters believed they had voted for Pat Buchanan by mistake.
The names were next to one another on the ballot. Democrats said the ballot design was illegal. Republicans said Democratic Party officials had never objected to it. The disputed election results in Florida introduced a new term into popular speech. Americans began talking about chads. Whether it was hanging chads, pregnant chads, or dimpled chads, it amounted to the same problem. It meant that a voting machine had not cleanly punched out a bit of paper called a chad when the voter made a choice. As a result, the ballot would confuse a vote-counting machine and make the choice unreadable. That, in turn, meant election workers had to look at each questionable ballot and try to decide the voter's choice. All this took place with the nation and the world watching and wondering who would become America's next president. Something else only added to anger and debate over the situation in Florida. Florida's Secretary of State, its chief election officer, Catherine Harris, also happened to be a leader of the Bush campaign there.
Governor George W. Bush, 2,912,790.
Almost 3 weeks after the election, Florida officials declared George Bush the winner of the state's 25 electoral votes. That gave him a total of 271. Out of 6 million ballots, state officials said he had defeated Al Gore by 537 votes. But the election was still not over. Gore and his supporters in Florida asked the courts to reject the results because of what they said were the many voting problems. The Florida Supreme Court ordered another count of the disputed ballots. Bush campaign officials quickly appealed to the United States Supreme Court. The court said Florida law did not explain how officials should judge the ballots. The court found the situation in Florida unconstitutional because there were different standards around the state. The justices also said not enough time remained to settle the issue before the Electoral College had to meet. On December 12th, the court voted 7-2 to end the recount and 5-4 against ordering a new one. 6 days later, on December 18th, members of the Electoral College met in each state capital and the District of Columbia. They made the election official. George W. Bush would become the 43rd President of the United States.
I, George Walker Bush, do solemnly swear
that I will faithfully execute the office of President of the United States.
That I will faithfully execute the office of President of the United States.
He took office on January 20th, 2001. The election dispute had divided Americans. But less than a year later, the nation was brought together by events that would set the direction for the presidency of George W. Bush.
A plane has just crashed into the World Trade Center here in New York City. It happened just a few moments ago.
The United States suffered the worst terrorist attacks in its history on September 11th, 2001. A day that would be remembered as 9/11.
That's our program for today. We hope these stories have informed you and helped improve your understanding of American English. I'm Mario Ritter, reporting from Washington. For all of us here at VOA Learning English, thanks for spending some time with us today. Join us tomorrow for another Learning English program from the Voice of America.